Let's do it.
Hello and welcome, or welcome back. I am James Giffins.
And I am Malcolm Childs. And this here, this thing that we're doing right now, is the Just Making Conversation podcast.
From Shelf Queens to X5 Green, we'll just be making conversation.
Remember, though, there are other podcasts that you can listen to.
Plastic Model Mojo.
The Model Podcast.
Plastic Posse Podcast.
On the Bench.
Model Geeks.
The Sprue Cutters Union.
Small Subjects.
Built Sideways.
Model by Carl Poden.
The Micro Machines Podcast.
Am Show Podcast.
And the Modelling Insanity Podcast. Head over to modelpodcasts.com for all of the links.
If you enjoyed this podcast, you can show your support in two ways. Leave a 5-star review somewhere useful, or contribute with coins. Visit paypal.me/podcastjmc for a one-time donation. For a monthly donation, check out the patreon.com/justmakingconversation. It's as easy as your log.
I'm using the new pun book I got for Christmas from James, so this opener should be hilarious. We are going to be just making conversation with Trip Aquadro from R. Duck Locomotive Works and his passion for trains and laser cut wood.
Trip makes some of the most breathtaking train models you've ever seen. Why not go and have a look at his Etsy account right now? Press pause and we'll see you in a moment.
Also, what does it take to create wooden kits? Is it much different to the plastic process? Does your wood shrink or swell in the moist conditions? Oh, dear. Thank you for choosing this podcast to listen to. I'm sure you won't be all aboard with this interview. It will be something to chew on. We've had some comments. Let's read some comments out.
Oh, what comments have we had?
Well, do YouTube first, because it's quick. David Common said, the canopies joke, a good standard dad joke.
Mm-hmm. Or never fails.
I thought I invented it.
Oh, I think you did.
Canopies. I thought I had, and then we'd talk to Bill, and clearly not.
Oh.
He was jumping out of airplanes, what, in the 60s? 70s? 80s? I don't know. 50s?
I don't know how many feet he was jumping out of. Talking about Bill, he also says, thank you, gentlemen. I had such a great time with you. It was very relaxed and you made it very comfortable to talk about models. Thank you so much. Looking forward to more episodes of Just Making Conversation in 2024. All the best, Bill. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, that was a good interview, wasn't it, with Bill?
It was, yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Hey, yep. I've actually, I'm just holding up a diagram at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there may be a new premises being inspired by Bill for the garden.
Oh, digging like underground basement with lights and stuff. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, the only way I'm going to do it is I'm going to have to put 6 levels underground.
All right. The Facey book.
Yes.
Lots of comments on our last one. Thank you very much for listening to that. We did very, very well in the podcast charts.
Mm.
Not that we look, of course.
No. No. Not at all.
No.
We didn't beat Gardener's World, unfortunately, but we're getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're going to start getting really nervous.
15 spaces away from Gardener's World in the hobby section in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
Moz has shared a picture of his cocktail dispenser. Have you watched the video?
I have, yeah. yeah.
Yeah. Someone shares their pictures of cocktail dispensers on your Facebook. Beware. But it is Moz, so what do you expect?
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that, Moz. I'm going to have a look for one of those. Looks cool.
Mm.
Adam Greenwald said, I listened yesterday, Christmas Day, in brackets. I want the book nook with the train and scenery moving part in the window, is what it says.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Gary Morris took the time to give us a message as well, and he said, excellent Xmas show. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Interesting book nook. He did buy one for the current Mrs. Morris as a sneaky way of getting us into the hobby.
Hmm.
And he also confirmed that he was not an officer. He does actually say he wasn't an office. I'm assuming he means officer.
He might have meant orifice.
He said he was a sergeant. Apparently means he worked for a living. As an office or an orifice. Thanks for the clarification, Gary. I appreciate that. And sorry if I accused you of being an orifice.
Rob Herring said he also listened on Christmas Day. Kept me company on the drive to the East Coast to see my folks. Yeah. Ray Davis says, Merry Christmas, Malcolm and James. Thank you both for a fantastic year's conversation about all things model related. I am looking forward to hearing more great topics from the land of the Hobnob very soon. Take care and stay well. Kindest regards and respect, Ray from Sydney, Australia. Kevin Butler says, thank you for everything you do for the Veterans and Podcasts. Hope to see you next year. Thanks, Kev. Do you want to talk about what's on your bench post-Christmas?
Yeah, I've not had a lot going on the bench because I've not been well.
That's a shame. I've got loads, so let me talk about that. Do you remember how upset I was with Ravel?
Yes.
Yeah, a couple of people have noted that and checked on me and did a buddy check to make sure I'm okay. Yes, I'm fine. I was really referring to this construction process of this Ravel kit, because now it has been beaten into submission and smoothed out and everything. As you can see, it looks beautiful. I'm very happy with it. So shuttle goes on the piggyback of the 747 thusly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll just balance it for now. But yeah, it looks really, really nice. So I've done that. I've done a bit more work to the base. So I put the arrow on where it's supposed to park. Mm-hmm. I've done the wheelie wheels. Really nice.
Oh, really good.
I've lost the nose wheel.
Oh.
Yep. It's gone. I had them all in crocodile clips, and the nose wheel's not on there anymore. So that's an arse. And I've turned the shed upside down trying to find it, and I can't. I'm going to have to find a new 747 nose wheel at some point. However, I'll put some pictures up and stuff of it. I'm very happy with it now. Very happy.
You've done a fine job on it. It does look quite nice, I've got to be honest.
Yes, thank you. It's neat enough. Looking at it, I can still see problems, but I'm happy it's accurate enough. I had to change the decals slightly here and there. On the shuttle, for instance, it doesn't actually have on when I was looking at the reference pictures, it doesn't actually have these black lines around here in the front of the boosters. And also I messed up the decal there. So instead of it saying Enterprise, it says Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. I think you'll find that on the original, on the left hand side, the sign writer was dyslexic.
Ah.
So I think you'll get away with that.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, but someone did say if you drew an arrow to the hatch, mm-hmm. that would be where they could put the pies for the pilots. So enter pies.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
Mm, that'd be good. So I need either an R or an entirely new set of decals for that. But the other one's fine. The one that says Enterprise on the wing, that's fine. The Enterprise got a much smaller amount of decals than the Discovery has. I guess it was because it's only just for glide testing, wasn't it? So, yeah, really happy with it. That is me. Which means that I will be working on something else. Dun, dun, dun.
My mojo is lacking. I do have some things to do. The Sea King is on the shelf of naughtiness.
So is it been parked for now?
Yes. It's been put to one side because I've mucked up marginally on a few things, but they're enough for me to be. It's actually the first kit that I've ever wanted to throw in the bin before finishing. Nothing to do with the kit. The kit is sublime. Airfix has done an absolutely amazing job of how it all goes together and the construction. I absolutely love putting it together. It's brilliant.
Mm.
Mm. The other caveat to my previous statement is it is also the only kit that I've made a hash of that I am determined to get another kit to do it again properly.
Oh, okay. Right.
So, because normally I would hash something up, put that to one side, do something with it at some point, and never buy the kit again. So that's purely the love of A, the kit and the subject. So yeah, that will be done in the new year at some point when I get the kit. But I have a few projects that are in the wings. There's a D-Day build that's going to be done. However, there are three different choices of what I want to do. One's quite technical and very inspired, and if I pulled it off, it would be amazing, but I don't think I will, but I'm not sure. So we're going down that road to a point. The other one is another build which would be very emotional, which I'd want to do, be wanting to do for a long time. So that probably be the build. But there's a third option, which is a multitude of different ideas that I'm trying to coddle together into one, all based around the D-Day theme. And then on top of that as well, I do actually have a landing craft that I want to build as well.
Wow.
Quite a lot going on there.
What's the group build for? Who's that for?
My Facebook group. Long build for D-Day because obviously it's the special anniversary in 24. So there'll be a couple of things around that that I want to get done. There's a couple of projects that I'm working on which are related to the business. And then I have a links that I want to do as well.
Oh, wow. Yes. Gotcha. Is that the links from before?
I've made some promises and not kept to them, and I feel very bad about that. I'm a man of my word. Just late.
Well, there we go. Just slow.
And of course, not forgetting the Moose rebuild on Christmas Day. Funny enough,
James, we have to do the music first, and then you talk about it.
Okay, I got all excited because there's an update.
Really. I know. We do have to do it properly. Oh. We will get letters and complaints.
Roll the music.
Roll it. It's not a piano. Ding, 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 ding.
Honestly.
Right, yeah. So here's the music.
Moosaroo Cup, the Moosaroo Cup. Let's talk about the Moosaroo Cup. Boom.
Woohoo! Go on then. What's going on with the Moose Room?
So, on Christmas Day, I got it out of the box, put it on my bench, put it back in the box and put it onto one side. So I must get back to it.
You've got 3 months.
I think it's like a mindset now.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got to the point I've been Malcolmized.
Wow, you lucky bugger.
I'm looking at the calendar and thinking there's far too much time to make this build. I need to leave it a little bit longer. So I'm under pressure with a short amount of time to complete it.
Mm.
I think that's what it is. I think I've challenged myself, or something's happened. Someone in the middle of the night while I was sleeping has hypnotized me into this. Don't touch it until it's almost got to be done tomorrow.
I don't know if you can default on it. I'd rather you didn't.
No, I'm not going to default on it. Definitely not. I've said I will do it, and I will do it. It's just not something I'm enthusiastic about. And, that's no criticism to anybody. It's just, that's just my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to overcome it.
Out of the box. Boom.
Well, this is it. I think that's what it is. I've done it out of the box. And I think that's maybe what it's about. It's just not inspired me into some crazy misadventure that would take me forever to do.
Only do it when you're ready. Otherwise, it will suffer for it.
I think we all have those kits, don't we? That we get a kit and we're like, and you think of it, overthink it, and then overthink it a bit more, and then you start playing with it, and you're like, I'll do that later. And I think it's just one of those builds.
Yeah, you'll be right.
But it has got to the point, in fairness, because it's here, right in front of me on my desk.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a constant reminder. Which I don't think is helping, because every time I come in there, I'm like, And that's the disappointment with the Sea King, is that I loved doing the Sea King so much.
Mm.
And then the small little errors that I made annoyed me so much, because I haven't been at the bench for quite a while.
Mm. Well, it's a roller coaster of a hobby, isn't it? Eh? If it was easy, everyone would do it.
I'm moaning unnecessarily. I will crack on. Although, picked up a base.
Ooh. James is showing me a breadboard for a small loaf.
Well, no, it's not, actually. This is not a breadboard. This is actually a spice rack.
Of course it is. What?
Because it's got three holes in the bottom, then it has some dowel rod and another piece that goes with it.
Okay.
The shop had lost the other bits.
What's it destined for?
Well, it's going to be either the Sea King base, or it might be a diorama base, which is more likely.
Mm. The next model kit I might be working on. Your group builds are like, group builds are great. They're really great. But when you've got a big stash of stuff you want to get through and build, sometimes the group builds, you might end up buying a kit to do the group build. But I might be doing these Gloucester Gladiator. We're once in the second Gloucester Gladiator next.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm going to be part of a North Africa World War II build. And that's the Friends and Models for Heroes one. And that is going to be Roald Dahl's crashed Gloucester Gladiator. The years don't quite match up. He crashed in 1940, and the group build is supposed to be from 1942. But hey, it's me. I'm going to do what I like. I'm not going to buy a new kit again. So I'm going to build this. And what I'm going to have is it crashed into a book. That one of the books describes the crash. And it's going solo. And I can't help think that if he hadn't crashed, hurt his back, ended up doing a desk job and writing, then we wouldn't have had Charlie and Chocolate Factory, Matilda, yada yada, DFG, yada yada is my favorite. So that's what I'm going to do, a little crash thing. Obviously, he did die. He was all right. If he had died, we definitely wouldn't have had it. But so I'm going to find out which one, because I've got the Mark I and the Mark II. So I need to find out how these two model kits, which one it was that he flew.
One thing we didn't talk about is, what did you get for Christmas?
Fatter.
Oh.
Way fatter. I eat so much on Christmas Day that I thought I might explode. I thought I was going to leak. Absolutely glorious. I got a Secret Santa, which was a TIE Fighter.
Ooh.
Yeah. Do you remember the one I used to turn into a walnut?
Yeah, yep.
Yep, walnut. The one that was kind of controversial.
Yes.
Well, I sold that one.
Oh.
Someone said they really liked that build, so they bought me another one. So that's cool. So I've got another one to do.
Yeah.
No other modelling-related items were purchased for me. I got the usual stuff like socks. What about you?
Me, I got some of these.
Cool. What are you calling them?
Engineering blocks, because that's what you call them.
1, 2, 3 blocks.
I got a couple of those. That was quite cool.
They're ace, aren't they? Really good. Really good for right angles. Really good for throwing at the cat.
I also got a brown box.
Mm-hmm.
And in this brown box is
a
1/16 gizmo figure. Which I think is the brother of yours.
Yeah, mine's got his gun sticking up.
Yeah, he's leaning on his.
Oh, cool. I think we should do it as a group build, like you and you. I paint mine up and you paint yours up and then we'll swap.
Yeah.
Should we do that?
Good idea. The other one I got comes in different pieces.
Is that because it got sent very badly in the post?
No. It's meant to be that way. I will show you this bit. I'll see if you guess what it is, which one it is.
The 16th scale dude with the cloak.
It's the 1/16th Russian sniper.
Right. Yep.
Comes in lots of different pieces. And obviously this one's, I'm showing it to Malcolm, and obviously you can't see it, but this one's got all the support still on the main body.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to be cleaned off. There's the head and the rifle and bits and pieces and that. And another package with his legs in.
And his head.
That's in the third package.
Hmm. And his legs. Who sent you those then?
These were bought by my mother-in-law from Mr. Gizmo.
Which were the ones that I sent you?
These are the ones that you got at the show.
Okay.
But they were from my mother-in-law.
Gotcha. I'm with you. Right. Yes.
Oh, no. I just dropped his head.
We were contacted by Johan Jakobsen Frentzen.
Ah, yes.
He said, hey, you guys, I enjoy your podcast. Why don't you go and chat to a chap who makes wooden scale modern trains called Our Dark Locomotive Works. And here is his website. Right? It's called Trip Aquado, and it's really great. He says, I'm not affiliated with Our Dark Locomotive Works at all, but I built their 08 shunter kit this spring. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and there's just something about building something out of wood. Many of these new scale model kits have a sort of clunky aesthetic to them, which I like. They're not 100% to scale as opposed to scale model boats, but they are fantastic, I think. Great for beginners as well. So I looked up and I thought, oh, this stuff is awesome. So we have got Trip with us today, which we're very excited about. So we've got an hour of time to sit and chat, and we're going to talk about wooden model trains. Welcome, Trip.
Hey, thanks guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, welcome.
Let's start at the very, very beginning. How long have you been making stuff for, and where does the love of trains come from?
Well, the love of trains is lifelong. I think since I could crawl, I was, you know, crawling around the house making train sounds. No idea why. But the whole R Duck Locomotive Works thing is about a little over 2 years old now. I would say probably just over, you know, just over 2 years. And it started in my kitchen as a random hobby just for fun. And honestly, it's gotten quite a bit out of hand, but we like it a lot. And it's been going really well. And we're making some cool stuff.
Cool. So, but what about your interest in making things?
So that goes all the way back to when, you know, everyone gets their first train set, you know, maybe a loop of track on a table. And it's like, oh, well, I want a tunnel. And it's like, okay, so how are you going to model a tunnel when you're like eight, right? Well, you get a piece of cardboard tube.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you put that cardboard tube on the tunnel and all of a sudden there's just this connection that's made in your brain where it's like, I just made a tunnel. And it was obviously up to your imagination to, you know, add the landscape and everything like that. But as time goes on, you know, that sort of mentality becomes more and more sophisticated. And just as I've grown, you know, and watching YouTube channel videos or listening to podcasts like yours, you learn different techniques and different ways in order to solve visual problems creatively through modeling.
Right. Yeah.
That has always been something that's grown and developed with me. You know, I had, you know, like most people, I had model trains as a kid. And the thing is that it just got bigger and bigger and continues onward.
And what about your working with wood as well? Because like, what I'm imagining, Trip, is that is these two hobbies are coming together and in like some sort of explosion.
Exactly. So I discovered laser cutting when I was in college. I initially studied architecture and I discovered laser cutting as a viable option for cutting cardboard. And I was like, oh, you could make trains out of cardboard. And there was this fleeting moment where it was like in my brain, like, wow, that's something that I would love to do, are cardboard kits out of trains. And then it's like, fast forward a couple years later, you know, I was basically doing research and, you know, different companies had already started coming out with different, you know, engineered kits out of plywood. And I was kind of like reading through the reviews because I was bored and I wanted to build a model, a locomotive. And I was looking around and I was like, well, Astra locomotives are like the price of a small car. Why don't we design something from the ground up? I think what I'll use is wood as a medium. And based off of reviews that I'd read online where people were building these and saying, oh, I wish there was an American outline, or like someone would be like, oh, why don't you do an SD40-2, you know, just like, so I developed the first kit, which was horribly designed, but that was the Hudson kit, the 464 Hudson locomotive. Oh yeah, I'm right on the main line too, from Boston to Portland. So the train literally is 50 feet away. Fantastic to be in a room dedicated to trains, surrounded by trains.
Perfect for podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You guys will be able to pick up on the entire schedule by the end of this. I've been doing digital design for so long that it really wasn't terribly tricky for me to fall into this sort of thing and just start doing it. And all it took was somebody reaching out and saying, hey, can I buy one of these? And I was like, all right.
Right. So it was like a perfect storm of your hobby, your skill at making things, your interest in trains as well, all coming together to make this happen, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Where does R Duck come from?
So before I was born, my mother had a company called the R Duck General Store in Western Massachusetts. And, you know, I'm a handful. So by the time I was born, she was like, this is too much with this kid. You know, I need to dedicate time to raising the kids rather than running the store. So sadly, closed up shop, but she kept all of these beautifully hand-painted signs that she had made and put them up in our barn. You know, that's where I spent the bulk of my childhood, just aimlessly nailing pieces of wood together. And, you know, as like an eight-year-old kid, just nailing pieces of wood together, you're like, oh, like I'm building a train. Which would later become a pretty substantially sized trolley car that I made out of wood, which we can talk about later.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when I was that young, I was kind of referring to the barn for a solid 2 years of time as the Arduck Locomotive Works. So, you know, fast forward 20 years later, when I'm trying to come up with a name for the brand, I was like, well, this whole thing is based off of nostalgia for me. You know, it's main driving factor. Why not name it what it actually is a continuation of, which is the Arduck Locomotive Works.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's where that comes from.
Nice.
I like it.
Looking at your wares, obviously American Railway is your main focus. Is there a temptation to do other types of locos from around the world?
Right now, my primary market is in the U.S. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of products that, you know, simply just sell better here in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
The U.K. is another major buying force. Same with Germany. I've kind of favored both the U.K. and the U.S. together to try to, you know, slowly start putting together locomotives from each area. But the goal is to offer German, Chinese, Japanese, Tibetan, all these different locomotives all over the world. But because the majority of my market is currently in the U.S., the focus really been on, okay, so let's give the people in the neighboring communities things that they want. New York Central 999, you know, or a Portland, Maine 044. And a big thing too is it's just, you know, that's what people ask for. You know, if, for example, I've got that JNL Porter 040, that was a big request from a lot of people. So generally speaking, like, I like to listen to the community. It's a fantastic community. They know all their stuff. You know, you don't want to make them upset. So you got to get it right. But they are a huge driving force in what gets built and what gets delivered to market.
Obviously, you've got a design background, but what were the things in which you had to overcome as you learned the process?
The funniest one, I think, because there's just like so many things that I overcome on like a weekly basis with this.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, we could fill up the whole hour, believe me. but I would say the biggest one for sure is when I moved away from using dowels as axles and just made it so, you know, they were laser cut wood pieces that fit together, and that's what made the axle. That for sure was probably the biggest, most influential design change I've made in whole entire scheme of things.
Are your axles square then now?
They are for the most part. So I don't know if you can see right there, but what it does is it perfectly gauges out your wheel, perfectly gauges out your axle.
So imagining it being square and it wouldn't go round, but if it has circles at each end of it, then it doesn't matter what shape the axle is, does it?
Yeah. So it really doesn't. With these, this is an extremely early kit, but as you can see, it's got a dowel, and the wheels just sat on there floating based off of the instructions. The instructions literally said, place on a track and then gauge the wheels to the track and then glue in place, which was a clunky, boring process that I don't think anyone wanted to be doing.
That's interesting. Couple of things I just want to pick up on. What is a nesting program? And for those that don't know, what is gauging?
Essentially, gauging is when you're fitting the axle to the track. So if you have a track that's, you know, 35 millimeter, you don't want your wheels to be 39 millimeters apart. Notice I used millimeters for you folks across the
Thank you so much. I do actually have my ruler that has both inches and millimeters, just in case.
Very worldly of you. I can probably explain the nesting program a little bit better.
Okay.
Nesting is, so let's say you have your completed three-dimensional model. And it's digital, right? So how do you turn it into something that you can build? Well, you have to take each component. You're basically getting the top-down elevation or top-down plan view of each part. And you have to organize it on your sheet. So essentially, you take all your parts and you're organizing them out on a board. There are programs out there that'll do it for you automatically. But the problem with that is they don't always group things together by stage. And one thing that I like to try to do as much as possible is group all the components that are being used within that stage on one panel
yeah.
in order to make sure that, you know, that way I don't have to go through and number every part.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah.
It's not like, oh, like I need A3. And it's like, oh, this is all A3. Let's pop that out. This is more like, okay, so you're looking at the drawing and you kind of have to do a little hunting, but it's not as bad as it sounds. Because the thing is, like, you know, you can find the parts pretty easily.
I mean, when you're talking about plastic models,
yep.
And you're following the instructions, there is a lot of hunting involved. Most, not all, but most will not break down the model into yes. the sections that you're doing. You know, starting right at the beginning, you've got A4. Okay, I'll get A4 sprue out. Lovely. B6. Oh, B6. F9. What the hell? Yep. I like that idea. That's and some of the plastic kits are starting to, or there's a lot more out there that are thinking that process through a little bit more.
That's what nesting is, yeah.
Yeah, that's essentially what nesting is when you're taking each component, laying it flat on a board, and creating what your vector is going to be. So the machines run off like a vector program. I use Lightburn, and it allows me to control like which lines are going to be cut lines, which lines are going to be engraved lines, and things like that.
Okay.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of weird jargon coming through.
I'm making notes of things that I don't understand.
Do you want one of my notebooks?
Yeah, I do. One of your notebooks you got for Christmas, just please. Is the process of building these locomotives as important to you as the final finished piece?
The sheer amount of enjoyment I get from original conception to product development to product completion to prototyping to marketing, all in a whole, are like, it's the greatest thing on the planet for me. Like, it is so fun. And the fact that I get to share that process with now 8,000 people on Instagram, which is, you know, not a crazy number, but considering where we were last year with, I think it was like 1,500 at the end of last year, you know, it's just growing exponentially. And the amount of like people who are thrilled with seeing this process and seeing how things are created, that's super fun. The finished models, like, yeah, they're cool. You can roll them back and forth and make the sounds. But I would say the process of developing and coming up again with those solutions to design problems is really the exciting thing for me. It's the challenge. And then when you get something that just works and you come up with a viable solution and you put that solution into practice, it is the most exciting thing. The most exciting thing and the most rewarding thing. And, you know, somebody will be like, oh, so what'd you do today? It's like, oh, well, I figured out a way to make a Johnson bar actually work. And they're like, what?
I've eaten the chocolate bar today. So the people who are building these kits, then you want them to enjoy the build as well as you want them to enjoy having the actual model on the shelf.
100%. And if in most cases, like I always say, because people ask me, like, how long does it take to build one of these? I always say, as long as it should take you, the longer you take to put something together, the better the final product is going to be. You know, like, you can leave it as bare wood, you know, or you can paint them.
Wow.
This is the little Fletcher Jennings 042. You go out and you make that work. Or, you know, you can make it realistic. This guy was kind of cool. In the U.S., these little tank locomotives that they would use at steel plants. You can add lights and stuff.
That does not look like it's made of wood.
That's kind of the exciting thing about it. You put a little firebox glow in there.
Oh, see, now that was going to be one of my questions. Do you have the ability to, or have you thought about having the ability of putting lights and sound cards and all that sort of stuff in?
I would love to do sound cards. I would love to do smoke machines. One thing that I really want to do is with one of these large A3 Pacific kits, I really want to show what's possible with the size and the scale and the scope of everything, like a video series on, just to help promote this newish sort of build system. And show people, like, you know, like ways that you can make a boiler that's, you know, made up of all these flat pieces. How do you make it look like a boiler? You know, how do you make it round and smooth?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be such a fun developmental process for myself, because it would be probably a month and a half of education, which is incredible. And then at the end, you know, you've got something that will A, inspire, and B, look really cool in your living room.
Yeah.
Weigh the same amount as a small child.
Yeah.
They are beautiful.
Thank you.
Just as wooden objects. I wonder how important is accuracy and detail to you? Because obviously these things have got lights, they've got fittings, they've got the correct push rods, they've got everything in the right places. So I'm just wondering how you decide what scale or what size you're going to go down to.
It all depends on the boundaries of what the material can do. Generally speaking, I'm able to, I don't know, what's a good example? An air pump. That's one of those little design things that just has to be overcome. That might mean 10 different revisions until I ended up with a design system that I liked, versus the bell, which I've had the same bell design since the first kit.
Mm.
The goal is always to provide people what they want, especially people who love trains, love railroad history, because generally speaking, we're all a little bit more attention director. We focus a little bit more on detail. And if something is glaringly incorrect, it'll like ruin a model for us. So a good amount of research goes into the development process to get it as physically close to the real build as possible. Somebody built like a American 440, but it's got the wrong drivers or something on it. Mm-hmm. That ruins the kit for me. What are the big glaring design elements? Got to get those right and then make changes along the way. You pretty much just keep dialing it in as much as you can.
Okay.
Mm. So what limitations do you have with the materials in which you use?
Curves are really tricky. Curving your faces, rather than like having to bend the wood, I really don't like doing that. Because let's say you have your material and you do the slotted, there are ways to bend a flat surface. But let's say, you know, you add the slots or the slitting into the wood to make it so it can be flexible. If the wood dries out too much, it'll just crack.
Yeah.
If you have a novice builder who's never built something like this before and they go to do it and they're like, I wonder how far this can bend. Well, you've just broken an integral part of your build. That's one huge thing. And then also, you know, when it comes to doing things like valve gear, occasionally wood thickness with humidity. So like I could have a kit that goes together perfectly well here, but if I ship that kit to Florida where there's a higher humidity, that whole kit is going to swell. They might end up with something that doesn't necessarily work. Okay, so which wood thickness gives me the best chance of success for everybody in all humidity levels?
How do you test different humidity levels? Is that like, I don't know, a steam room?
So essentially right now it's winter time in New England.
Mm-hmm.
It's dry because we've got heaters running and everything like that. The humidity level in here is just ridiculous. You have to constantly stay hydrated. It's almost like living in a desert. And then in the summer, we've got just the craziest humidity you could ever imagine. So certain kits are going to roll perfectly well right now on my shelves. Come this summer, everything's going to bind up a little bit. So, Okay, so how can we dial in the thickness of wood, whether it swells or shrinks? It's not going to negatively affect the overall performance to a point where it's unbuildable. Everything that I produce is buildable. Just like normal train sets, everything requires a little bit of a run-in. So, you know, if you have like a little, you know, 040, it's always good to roll it around a little bit. And it will work itself into a running fashion. Generally speaking, things just need a little WD-40 and a little willpower, and you can get it rolling really nicely.
Push power.
Yeah. Enough thrust, anything tends to move.
Yeah, you know? Oh, yeah.
Add another rocket to it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
For a second there, I honestly thought that you'd gone OTT, scientific, testing the ability of wood thicknesses in moisture levels, in humidity, etc.
I just don't think that level of research really needs to be accomplished. I think it can mostly just be resolved by designing around the issue and having an understanding that we can't make this fit within this space. We have to allow 1/64 or 1/32 of an inch on this side to allow for some growth. And
wow,
like I said, it keeps me up at night.
It's a reminder that it's an organic, product, isn't it?
Birch grows very quickly.
Oh, that's another question I was going to ask, what type of wood it was.
Yeah, so it's a Baltic birch, which I sourced from a company out of New Jersey, and then they get it from the Baltic region. But what's really nice about it is every single time I place an order, they plant a tree. We're directly responsible for 4 to 5 trees being planted a month, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Big fan of where I get the wood from.
So how much wood does it take? So give me an example. So that the 040 that you showed us earlier on, how much wood does that take in terms of plankage, square footage?
So essentially, because I give a lot of track with these things too. What we'll do is, this is an order going to a gentleman in Connecticut.
Okay.
I'm going to have his order featured on this.
Okay.
So this is the 040. So essentially, kit just opens up. So you're presented with a welcome letter, which basically outlines everything that you need for the build, including sandpaper, glue, and a little WD-40, and a bit of thrust. And then you get a fun, informative, I guess you could call it like a little poster. But I started doing these because I was a big fan of them. But basically, you get a little spec sheet.
Oh, nice.
Describes the model. You know, it's something to put on the wall. Just a little something extra. And then what you get is the kit.
Oh, wow.
A block of these pieces that you just pop out of the board and you assemble.
So what we're looking at, obviously for the people at home, is essentially like a really large block of cheese. Like if you like a party selection box of wood. That's what I would say.
So this one's about, I think it's like 6 by 11 by 3 inches.
Oh, okay.
To do a quick thing in my head, I don't think I could turn that into metrics super easily. But yeah, this is a small kit. You know, this is one of the small ones. Mm. The big ones are generally a little bit bigger. This is an A3 Pacific kit, and the kits are, you know.
Yeah.
So they get bigger than this too. You know, that's.
Yeah, that's a good, you know, 0.5 meter box. It's like the size of a Revel space shuttle and a 747 box, isn't it? Are they heavy?
Generally pretty heavy. The small ones are probably about 2 pounds, like these little guys. But when you start getting into these larger kits, you're looking at like 9 to 10 pounds for boxes, because it's just packed with material, absolutely packed with material. And the way that I organize the sheets is I'm trying to cram as many pieces onto a sheet as possible. Many companies get around this by, you know, skimping out on making, you know, if they've got like a solid face, they'll do like the outline of the face. And then there's like a hole in the middle and it keeps the weight down. But I don't like that. I like things to have full faces that you can paint. And yeah, we go overboard on the engineering of these things. So they're robust. The A3, the super scale stuff is a lot heavier. Like this thing's like 40 pounds.
Yeah.
It's great.
And is it all wood? You don't use any metal plastic parts at all?
Nothing. It's all wood. The only thing that isn't wood on here is the glue that you use to put things together.
Sure. And is that just regular PVA you would recommend?
No, I use like a tacky glue, like a tacky white glue. Works perfectly. A good example.
They're like Elmer's glue.
I'm not sure. I think you guys probably have it in the UK. Probably not this brand, but maybe something extremely similar. But Eileen's tacky glue. It's fantastic. It's water-based. And it works super well for everything.
Is it dry clear? You know?
It does dry clear.
Yeah, it's probably the same as our PVA then. Polyvinyl acetate.
This is nice because it's all water-based and non-toxic too.
Okay, so dabs of super glue and things like that if you want something to...
You, You could use super glue. The problem is that super glue isn't as forgiving, so I don't promote people using it. I guess like one place where you could use it is really if you were, you know, adding small little details that were a surefire fit. You know, the nice thing about that is, you know, let's say you're like me and you like to rush stuff. You like to rush your build. You know, you put your pieces together, you're moving on to the next stage, and then you look down and you're like, wait a second, that's backwards. You can still go back and fix it, you know, which is, I do this for a living and I do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
You probably noticed there aren't any instructions in the box. Well, the reason for that is all the instructions are digital. One thing that I had a problem with another, you know, laser cut kit is the instruction manuals are trying to force as much information onto a single page as possible to keep the cost of producing the instruction manual down, which leads to the inevitable issue of somebody not being able to successfully build their kit because the instructions are just so gosh darn confusing. So what I did is I was like, okay, so how can we make it the whole entire process as intuitive as humanly possible? And it's literally every stage of my build system is take this piece, put piece here, next page, take this piece, put this piece here. And because it's digital, I don't have to worry about using as little space as possible. I can make an instruction manual 200 pages if I want and not have to charge that forward to the builder, keeping in a really, really attractive price range.
If you made a mistake and the kit's gone out, you can change it on the fly.
Absolutely. All the time. Or refine something or add notes. Really, it's incredible. It's a great way to do it. You know, generally speaking, I think the younger generations are more open to that philosophy and that principle. The older generations don't necessarily like it so much.
Uh-huh.
They learn pretty quickly that they like it once they try it.
They all move. Do they all move the same way they do in real life? So I'm talking about like the push rods, like for instance, the A3 Pacific. Does all the mechanisms and cylinders all work? And
as much as possible.
Within the limitations of the material and the size.
But, you know, you try to make it as...
Oh, hang on 1 second.
Ooh.
1 sec, I've got my tea delivery.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Look at this. This guy makes these wooden train kits.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Can I have one for Christmas?
Add it to the list.
Yeah. Add it to the list, he says. Dear Father Christmas.
So to answer your question, to get it as close to realistic as possible, I know some people might point out like this whole area here, but again, you know, you're restricted by certain rules in terms of like, you know, thickness of wood dictates the placement and also the structure of the material. So there's certain things that, you know, you have to negate while you're designing, but for the most part, you can really bring them in. And then, of course, on A3s, you get the classic third cylinder sort of thing in there. So it does have...
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It does have that, which is replicated. The one thing that I wanted to add, which I couldn't add, was the movement of the motion up here. It was just too tight of a space to get it all. For the most part, I'm very pleased with how this one turned out.
Mm. Mm.
There's a couple videos on Instagram, too, of these things in motion, and the A3s are graceful. It's such a fun kit to roll around because it's so smooth.
And they come with choo-choo sounds.
Mm.
You have to supply your own.
Oh, okay.
But when I have an open house here, I one of the first things I tell people when they walk through the door is feel free to play around with everything and also make the sounds if you want. I'm not going to judge you for that. I do it myself.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, when a kit is start to be finished, when you're building it, is you start to make the engine sounds, you know, the aeroplane flying around and things.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool, aren't they, James?
They are amazing.
Can you believe we're doing a podcast about trains?
Well, I know. I was just looking at the big chunky one. Oh, I like that so much.
£182.
Mm.
The 04072. I wonder how long they take to build.
Well, I think it's probably very much you could do it in 48 hours if you really wanted to.
Maybe you could. in March.
Yes, that is very true. But I would surmise that you really wouldn't want to rush it.
No.
You know, making the cylinders round. You know, if you wanted to go to the nth degree, then that's not gonna be a quick job.
Well, the way he's done the cylinders is they're one end of them is round.
Yeah.
It's just a round disc. And then he's got rings on the outside. It's got that dark edge where the lasers cut it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it'd be that hard to do. You know, certainly within the scheme of things, it's not that hard to do. I'm looking at it, thinking to myself, do you know what? I could get one of those. I could sand it, paint it, and then have people going, "Oh, that's amazing! Where did you get that? It's made of wood." Don't be so silly.
Get out of here.
That would be a mind blower.
You have to leave the bottom unpainted on purpose to show that it was made of wood.
Oh, you and your unpainted bottoms.
But of all the reasons to not paint the bottom of something, then that it would be.
Yes, you're not wrong in what you're saying. The thought of lights and sound cards as well, sort of. Oh, I could get very carried away.
Yeah. Well, I want to know, has anyone made an actual working train set with motors? One of these?
So what they'll do is they'll take our favorite plastic building block system, and they'll take the components from the train sets that they offer. And they'll gut them and put the battery boxes and the power sets into the kits themselves. And they'll run them back and forth on the straight track. The big issue is when you come into a corner, because the wheels don't have the same shape as, you know, any other model train wheels out there, you know, where the wheels generally have a bit of a conical shape to them to keep them from hunting. Typically, these things like to just jump the track. They're not heavy enough, but that's not to say that somebody couldn't successfully make this into a very, very good working system. The amount of skill that's out there to turn these into something like that definitely exists. And I promote that people explore that as an option because, you know, the way I see the entire lineup is I really wanted to create something that was affordable in a hobby that's generally marked by being outrageously expensive. It's large and it's a blank canvas. Take it as far as you want. You know, it's your model. If you want to paint up one of these, you know, A3s and hot pink and glitter, by all means, go for it. I'm not going to stop you. If send me pictures, I want to use it as a promotional. To power them, to add lights, to add smoke, that's something that is exciting for me to see happen as things progress on further and further.
Sure.
Don't put a real fire load in it.
No.
Not a great idea. You know, if you've got a tender and you try to fill it with water, you might get some realistic sloshing sounds for a couple seconds, but I don't know if you want that kind of realism.
Yeah, gosh. Well, possibilities of what you could do with these things, obviously, now I'm thinking about it, is quite enormous, especially with that super scale. What's the scale in model railway terms for that one? Because that one is like the size of a small toddler.
This is like 112,
Oh my
but
God.
it's just like the full
Wow.
interior and everything. You know, and it's the same as the small kit. So it's got all the motion on the inside between the frames. This is the thing. So I showed my mom this once at a trade show because I was like, "Oh yeah, you got to see this thing. It's pretty cool." And she's like, "What is it?" And I was like, "Front opens up and you can see the flues on the back." And she's like, "God, you're such a nerd." And I was like, "Yeah."
Thank you.
But you can see the flues in there and the blast pipe and everything. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, does it actually squeak when you closed it?
Oh yeah, it squeaks.
Oh.
It weighs a ton and it rolls. These go together super well. Super well. They're really incredible. And you can name it whatever you want. You know, that's a really cool thing. If somebody wants like a custom name or custom number, I can absolutely do that. Stock option is Royal Eider 60114. But if you want to do like cinnamon roll,
Oh.
Oh, he's gone right off him. All of a sudden, you mentioned the C word, and that's it. He's just back.
Anything but. The Hobnobs.
Oh, yes.
The only issue with the super scale stuff is shipping it to your country is madness.
Mm-hmm.
It's like shipping a car to another country. The shipping price is just atrocious.
Is it the weight? Yeah. Is that the issue?
Yeah. Kit is about, I think it's like 50 pounds, 60 pounds to ship, and it's just brutal. Absolutely brutal. So I'm as a growing company, I'm always looking for new ways to get things to the folks on the other side of the pond as effectively and economically as possible. So it'll come with time, but all I ask for is a little bit of patience.
Yeah, there's nothing you can really get away from that. You know, so certainly at the moment with shipping costs generally, it is what it is. Yeah, I'm sure it would make you cry just even thinking about how much that would cost to send, but it does look fantastic.
It does look beautiful, especially because you've got all the little controls and things inside, you know, regulator and everything.
Even on these little Fletcher Jennings kits, you know, it's like, this is the nice thing too. The backs come off like that.
Oh, of course they do. Wow. Yeah.
Whole setup.
Does that all move? Can you wind them and stuff?
So, yeah. So like, you know, the throttles move, the little firebox doors open up. So you can really have some fun with it.
Oh, my God.
You could even, you know, add more detail to it if you want. Sky's the limit.
I feel kind of funny, James.
See, this is what I warned you about. We're much well known for talking about people that are enthusiastic about trains in a potentially a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
I recently have built an old kit from Airfix, a HO, and just, yeah, I like trains. And now Malcolm's becoming a train nerd. You know, the fact you can open your firebox, he's in there already.
That's the thing that I'm trying to do with all these things is like, how can I take it really as far as what's possible, you know, like as far as possible to make it more exciting and more interesting and, you know, add play value, but not play value like, oh, you press a button and this opens up and then this does this.
Old fashioned play.
Oh, you have cylinder cock handles in the cab that you can yeah. open up, or like got a reversing handle that actually spins, or
yeah.
On the tender for this thing, you know, there's a water scoop on the bottom that drops down if you pull that little the little handle. That's what I call play value.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Even you're never gonna notice the water scoop moving if you didn't look for it, but it's there.
Wow. From a sort of a scale modeling perspective, I'd be quite interested in, as I said earlier on, the process of building. When you're putting them together and you're designing them, are you thinking about the way that you put things together as well? So I'm thinking is like once you put it together, do you then, if you've got a mistake in there, can you take it apart again and go back? Or how does it work?
Typically, I won't notice a mistake until it goes into the like preliminary build processes. With nesting, it's really easy for me to get back into the program and just replace a part if needed. Generally speaking, it's like something extremely minor that doesn't affect too many other parts. The worst is when you notice that something was asymmetrical from the beginning of the build process, and that's something that, you know, you got to kind of like keep tabs on as you're designing to make sure you're not doing something early enough on that's going to affect the entire build. Because if that happens, you got to restart from ground.
Well, what about someone who's actually has the kit and starts building it and has made a mistake? What would they do to rectify it? Because if it's glued...
I have an excellent policy where it's like, let's say you accidentally break a part. I'll send you a new part. Free. No problem. Even if you're on the other side of the ocean. Yeah, it's probably going to take a while to get there, but that's your punishment for screwing up and not following directions. I've had individuals like mess up an entire stage of a build.
Uh-huh.
When that happens, it's, you know, have they been nice to me in the like asking for help? Yes. Okay. I'll send them that stage. No problem. Generally speaking, I tend to have a lot of spare stuff kicking around. So it's like, shoot it over. It's easy.
Okay. Okay.
But most of the time, I would say 99% of the time, everybody is fantastic. I always send out free parts. I'll send out free stages and everything like that, whatever they need. What's the experience that I would like as a consumer from somebody else? And it's like, well, that's what I try to provide.
Right. Is there somebody you are a consumer of? Is there someone similar that what does what you do
Not really. I make a lot of my own toys. I think everybody has that same mentality. I think nowadays there tends to be a deviation away from having a person associated with a company. If I think of like Lego, it's like, I don't know the guy that runs Lego right now. You know, you think of these large companies, who's at fault if something goes wrong? Mm. Who is responsible? Who can I talk to? Who can I get an answer from?
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be that sort of accountability for the product like out there. I think certainly there are companies that do it, but maybe not so much in, I think Rapido does a great job of being like Jason Tron is the face of Rapido, even though, you know, he's got all of his other people working with him too, that are present on social media. And there's this familiarity with the consumer and the company and the producer, you know, it creates a more human interaction. And it's why I try to do as much of that as possible through Instagram, chatting on podcasts like this one, because it creates an environment where people feel comfortable to approach and provide constructive feedback and criticism, voice their successes in a positive way, which I think is genuinely the most important thing when promoting a hobby so it can grow and get better. There just needs to be that level of communication and customer service across the board, so people don't feel like they're just getting scammed by another robot company. And that's a core principle of Arduck.
And it's a company that you would want to buy from yourself.
100%.
Makes sense.
I can tell you, I have put in a basket to look at what the shipping would be to the UK.
Yep.
The Doncaster A3 Pacific, which retails at £182.50, and the delivery is £78. It is what it is on the delivery side, but realistically, that for what you're getting, that's not.
Are you going to do a custom name and number?
I did put a custom name in there. Whether I press the black button or not is a whole different matter. keeping the security of your products is paramount, because obviously there's a lot of copying that goes on in any market.
Tremendous amount.
But the hardest part, I would imagine, above that would be the control element, because you're no longer in control. You're trusting someone else to meet your standards, and you've not got the ability to drop in, go, how's it going? Oh, that looks bloody awful.
Oh, yeah. If we were selling software, maybe, but like if you're selling, you know, model train kits, you know, I don't think we're ever going to have a private jet.
You could have a private jet, but it'll be made out of wood.
Yeah, and pedals.
And Fred Flintstone it on the ground, and you know, you'll have to paddle it across the ocean.
No, you can't. See, I'm an expert in this now. You can't, because it will get moist and it'll just swell up.
Oh, yeah.
No, all it means is you'd start off feeling comfortable and you get a little ways, and all of a sudden
you'd be like,
yes. Yeah.
If you were so squeezed that you couldn't pedal, the tide would take you eventually.
The tide and the currents? Oh, yeah.
You might end up in Cuba.
Now we're really starting to make some sense here.
So you were going to tell us about a trolley car that you made when you were a child.
Gosh, I must have been in seventh grade, and I had discovered that if you have a jigsaw, like a powered skill saw, or like, you can pretty much make anything. And I remember like having breakfast and thinking like, how great would it be if I had a trolley car? Mm-hmm. And we figured out a way to have tracks that went all over town. And like, you just go to your friend's house and I wouldn't have to worry about having a car and all that stuff. And I was like, this is practical. It worked for San Francisco. You know, like, so it was just like, oh my gosh, like for some reason, I really convinced myself that this was a completely feasible, realistic thing to create public transportation in my town.
That's very good of you.
Right? So I started researching plans and I found like a picture of a trolley car online that I liked. I was like, we're going to build this one. We got like the plans and everything. We found a bunch of photos, like reference photos. And I was out in the barn, you know, the original Arduck Locomotive Works, with all these photos just haphazardly nailed to the wall. You know, my dad always had random sheets of plywood kicking around that I wasn't allowed to touch. we cut those up. And over the course of the summer, I just started building up this trolley car from the ground up. It didn't have wheels. It didn't have suspension, but power was something that I was interested in procuring. I had like a Briggs and Stratton like engine out of a cement mixer that my dad brought home.
Wow.
And he was like, it doesn't work. Well, we'll figure that out. We put like a can of starter into it and everything to try to get it to turn over. And at that time, I thought that repairing a motor meant just cleaning the outside of it. So it looked really pretty, but nevertheless, it was still useless. And yeah, that kind of ended it. But it got pretty far. It had an electrical system, so it had a rear light, had a front light, had a bell, had a horn. Everything was pretty much there, ready to go. So it's still in the barn. It's under, I think, an RC plane and a canoe.
How long was the track?
I think I made like 16 feet worth of track mm-hmm. out of mm-hmm. iron angle pieces. The plan was to use rebar for the axles. The wheels were, you know, bicycle training wheels that I had taken the tires off and cut one side of the flange off. So it was still a flanged wheel, but it's like you put any weight on that and it's just going to split apart. So, you know, it wasn't good. I never promised it was going to work. It said I would make it. But yeah, that once school started up, I kind of forgot about that project.
It looks the part. Huh?
It's still there.
Look the part.
We'll pull it out at some point. Oh yeah, it looked the part. It was a very function follows form sort of thing, you know. Different time.
Excellent.
Obviously we ran out of funding.
Yes.
Crowdfunding wasn't really a thing at that time, and
was the original RDuck trolley car, huh?
We'll do it at some point.
How do you decide what your next project will be? And what you're working on next? Do you have like a spreadsheet of someone's asked for a British something or other, and I have to tick the box 20 times before? Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So a great deal. So there are three ways I determine what the next kit is going to be. Community requests. If anyone out there has an idea for a locomotive, no matter how many times somebody says it, it still gets put on the list, and that number continues to climb, and that determines heavily what kit gets made next. The second option is I do a fair amount of work with museums now. Museums will contract a build, so they'll pay and, you know, commission a project to be produced. There's a museum in New Mexico. They're doing a 484 Northern locomotive, which is going to be insane. The Wiscasset up in Maine, a little Maine two-footer. You know, there's all these different groups out there who are now partnering up with me to develop a product specifically for their shops.
Oh,
and one thing we're working on developing too is, okay, so when, you know, let's say they've spent, you know, $3,500 on commissioning this new design, you know, we are still the owners of this design, but what happens is as that kit is in our shop, every time it gets purchased, 10 to 15%, it's still up for grabs, gets kicked back to them in the form of a donation to help keep everything up and running, which might not sound like a lot, but considering when you do like 250 plus of units of one locomotive, you know, you're looking at thousands of dollars in returns. Pays for itself pretty quick.
Yeah. Sure.
Third one is like, let's say I've had way too much coffee and I saw the CP Huntington or like a little locomotive and I'm like, oh, I want it. Then honestly, kind of like how this company started, and we will continue to do that exact same thing.
Okay. So just loads of people keep saying, sending you photographs of their favorite locomotive.
Please keep sending me photographs of your favorite locomotives. Do not stop, but don't get upset if I don't do yours next. And understand that if you ask for something obscure, it probably won't happen right away. It'll happen down the road, but probably not right away.
Trip, where can they find RDuck? What's the best places to go? And what websites do you have?
At RDuck Locomotive Works on Instagram. It's the same with Facebook. We have a website. It's www.rducklocomotiveworks.com. And then also Etsy is our main store for right now. And that's where you're going to find every single product currently at market. And of course, if you guys have any questions or if you want to talk trains or anything like that, all you have to do is just shoot me a direct message on Instagram or Facebook. I love chatting with everybody. I love hearing ideas. And yeah, come along for the ride.
Thank you so much, Trip. Thank you for your time. We've gone over time.
Been fascinating.
Your products are beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt.
And that was one of the main reasons that I wanted to talk to you.
Mm. Well, thank you guys. I really, this was a lot of fun. And if you ever want to chat, just let me know. I'm always around.
Secretly, I think Malcolm's already dialing that number now.
There you go.
Dear Father Christmas, have you heard of our dark locomotive? Trip has an infectious passion when it comes to wood, trains, and model making that can only inspire you too.
So now you have every reason to be playing with your wooden train, pushing it around and enjoying making those sound effects just like you did all those years ago. Next time, we'll just be making conversation about other subjects relating to this daft hobby of ours. You've been listening to Just Making Conversation with
James Skivines
and Malcolm Childs.
Follow us on Facebook, where we post photographs, updates, and other items.
Find us on Spotify, Amazon Music, iTunes, Google Podcasts, YouTube, and all the others.
Let us know what you're just making and what your thoughts are on the conversation in this episode.
Why, thank you so much for following us.
The fuck's that?
Thank you to the following supporters from paypal.me/podcastjmc or at patreon.com/justmakingconversation.
Mark Ewing, Daniel Knoffel, Paul Gallagher, Chris McLean, Philippe Lefreniere, Johan Frenson, Mike Beepstucker, Mike Shelley, Mark Harriet, Elliot Capredi, Adam Kieran, Joshua Keane, Craig Nicholas Elliot, Robert Lane, Dean Ivana Middle Model Kit, Callum from Micro Machines Podcast,
Paint All the Minis, Peter, Brad, Warren, Tim, Black Rifle, John, Julian, Chuck, Mark Bakawahi, Simon the Jersey Gent, Steve Lee, Costa, Mark, Ray, Neil Twice, Mike, Robert, Andrew, Drew, John, Mike, Jeff, Richard, Lynn, Gordon, and the 8 others.
Well done. You can read the whole thing next time if you want.
No. I like just jumping in there. If you do show your support, leave your name so we can paint the roll of honour on the tail of the next episode. Goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
It's as easy as your log.
Your log?
Your log.
My log? Your log?
Your log.
Oh, that's your accent. Your log. Is that a international thing, the your log, or is it just...
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't know.
Do we do it again?
No, that's fine.